We hope you enjoy this recording of a live broadcast brought to you by Torah in Motion. For more learning opportunities, please visit www.torahinmotion.org.
All right, Shavua Tov, everybody. On behalf of Serena and David, David has a little bit of a cold, so he's asked me to speak on their behalf, and I want to thank them, of course, for once again, as they so often do, open up their home for us, that's for our motion, for so many other important activities in our community. And I want to thank you and Serena for hosting this event. It was really, the idea was just to have a discussion, group, a small shiur. David mentioned to me when Rabbi Bigman was coming in, maybe he can give his shiur. He wrote a tshuva on Kol Isha. So I said, okay, I think that's an interesting idea. And then, David said, let's make it at 7 o'clock so people can go out afterwards. And you have a little bit of learning and socializing. But I don't know, I can just... Oh, see, now I transfer the blame. You see where it really belongs. Anyways, I'll very briefly, for those who weren't in our chaim in the morning, which is about half of you, Rav Bigman is the Rosh Yeshiva in Malek Gilboa, and really has, besides leading the yeshiva, he's a prominent posek in the modern Orthodox world. He worked on kibbutz, grew up in Detroit, learned in Chicago, in Detroit, has been living in Israel since 1977, and it's really a pleasure to have him here over Shabbos and to speak. He'll be, of course, addressing the issue tomorrow morning at 9:30 at our chaim on Prozbul, really as a template for how you have to understand in the Gemara, the pre-Gemara, the sources to build up. That's at 9:30 in the morning, and tonight he'll give a shiur on Kol Isha, going through some of the sources, and we'll have time for questions afterwards. And I just want to mention, currently there's also an excerpt from his upcoming book that's on your sheet on the Parsha. He really speaks on many fields in Machshava and Halakha. Without further ado, Rabbi Bigman. What's your time limit? However long it takes, the choir will sing when the evening is over.
Okay. So, just a woman. That depends on what he said.
Glad you listen to the small room.
Oh, it's
okay.
Is that bothering
you? Okay. Oh, the taping. Okay. Okay. So, we're going to flow with this. We'll see. We're going to start with the basic Tzviya. And by doing the basic Tzviya, you'll get that one of the major issues that created a great argument among the Rishonim. And if we have time, we'll flow into later Halakha and how this developed. And we'll get into the nitty-gritty of present-day situations. Okay. So first, we'll learn the Gemara together. And since I can only learn the Gemara the only way I learn Gemara, so you will see a little bit of my methodology in Gemara as well, even though it's very minor in the sugya. Okay, so we have Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Tefach B'Isha Erva. Okay, so Rabbi Yitzchak says, I don't know, it's a very difficult term to translate, Erva. Okay, so I don't know how it was handled in the translation of the Tshuva. I think he just left it erva. What? Nakedness, is that what he said? Nakedness? Okay. So, this statement is attacked by the Gemara. Stama d'shas. And the Gemara says, Lamai. Ile malista kuleva, if this statement, tefach b'isha erva, refers to the male gaze, v'ha, after all, amar av sheshet, למה מנה הכתוב תכשיטים שבחוץ עם תכשיטים שבפנים? לומר לך, כל המסתכל בעצבה קטנה של אישה, כאילו מסתכל במקום התורה. If it has to do with the male gaze, there's a statement by Rav Sheshet that says that the male gaze is independent of how much of a woman's body is exposed. A male can look at a woman's small finger in the improper way. Okay? So this is considered an attack on what Rabbi Yitzchak said. Rabbi Yitzchak said, Tefach b'isha erva. Rashi immediately explains, and this is the explanation accepted by all Rishonim, that Tefach means a one, Tefach is
handbreadth.
I think in Greek, so you'll have to bear with my translation. So, a handbreadth, Rashi explains a handbreadth of the places in a woman's body that are normally covered. Notice that, normally covered. Okay, so it depends what normally what would be normally covered. Okay, so so when a handbreadth of a woman's body that is not normally seen is exposed, that would be considered nakedness. If this has to do with the male gaze, that is not relevant, because the male gaze is dependent only on one thing, the male gaze. Nothing else has nothing to do with the way the woman is dressed. It has to do with the man's psychic, I would say. So then, the Gemara says, it must be talking about Ela b'ishto v'likriyat shema. So Rabbi Yitzchak's statement must be referring to Kriyat Shema, and according to most explanations of the Rishonim, Kriyat Shema, and even his own wife. So if his wife is standing in front of him when he's saying Kriyat Shema, and is not dressed as she normally is dressed, as women are normally dressed, it would present a problem for Kriyat Shema. This is the explanation of the Gemara based on the contradiction. However, this sees through the natural context of the words of Rabbi Yitzchak as they appear in Masechet Brachot in the context of circumstances that are proper or improper for the saying of Kriyat Shema. So even though the Gemara has chosen this point of view as a result of a contradiction with the words of Rav Sheshet, is everybody following me? It would seem to be the natural context of the statement of Rabbi Yitzchak, the context of Kriyat Shema. Okay? So now, as we finish this opening statement of the Gemara, we now have two statements, one of which is clearly a halachic statement, and the other one is most probably a halachic statement, but not absolutely clear. The halachic statement is that when a woman is, woman's body is exposed, one hand breadth beyond which is normally exposed, a male should then not say Kriyat Shema in her vicinity. That's one statement. The other statement is that the male gaze is a problem independent of how the woman is dressed. Okay, is that a halachic statement? What do you think? I'm very frontal shiurim, so they're going to have to bear with me in terms of what is heard and what is not heard. What do you think? Is that a halachic statement or not? When it says, when Rav Sheshet says, I hope you have enough of a nuance to understand it. Amar Rav Sheshet, lama mana katuv tachshishim tshevachutzim tachshishim b'shebifim. It has to do with the things that were captured in the war with Midian. Lomar la kola mistakel ve'etzva ktana shel isha ki'ilu mistakel b'mkom ha'torev. Would you think that was a halachic statement? Talmudist among you. What? I heard a note here from somebody. Yes, why do you say that? Just the nuance.
It doesn't feel right.
You're absolutely right. It doesn't feel right. The reason it doesn't feel right is anytime we have a statement in the Talmud that says, call something, 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 is considered kilo something, something, and something horrible, it's usually not a halachic statement. It's not usually a halachic statement. Usually it's an agadic statement that has moral significance. This obviously has deep moral significance and is very relevant. So just judging from this Gemara, I would assume this isn't a halachic statement. However, there is another Gemara which complicates matters. There's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah that talks about Rav Gamliel, who saw a beautiful woman and said, Marabu Masech Hashem, a beautiful Nochriya, and the Gemara says, how could he have possibly looked at her? Asur! The Amar Rav Sheshet, Kol HaMistakel. Okay, the Yerushalmi just says, in our words, pasnisht, about that story. And they both include that he wasn't looking at her, he just happened to meet her because she came around the corner. Okay, so the Bavli in Avodah Zarah takes this agadic statement and uses the terminology asur. Okay? So that happens sometimes. not only in the time of the Gemara, even in later literature, that something which is said as an ethical statement of some sort becomes halakha. Okay, so then we have a siman in Shulchan Aruch that talks about the way males relate to females. And one of the important points there is how about the male gaze. Most of it talks about the male gaze. Okay? So that stems from that one statement, and the way the Gemara Abu Dazara takes it to be a halachic statement. Put that aside a minute, and we're going back to the our Gemara that says Tefach Bisha Erva. Because then we have a few more statements of early Amoraim. Okay? Not in chronological order. Okay, that's for you. There's some exceptions. Usually the Amoraim, when the Gemara quotes the Amoraim, first generation, second generation, third generation, sometimes we have six generations of Amoraim in a row with no comments of Stama at all, one after the other. But in this particular Gemara, the order is reversed. There are a few when the order is reversed. So we have Avchisda, and then Shmuel. Okay, Amar Avchisda, Shok B'isha Erva. שנאמר גלושק שוק אבי נערות בכתיב תגל הרבתך וגם תראה הרבתך אמר שמואל כל באישה ערבה שנאמר כי קולך ערב ומערך נווה אמר רב ששת שיער באישה ערבה שנאמר שרך כעדר העיזים. Okay, Rashi on the word ערבה here says תאווה. So I don't know, my student who translated nakedness, ערבה is nakedness. Rashi says, you see why Rashi says Tava? Because, you see why Rashi uses the word Tava in this context? Because of Shir HaShirim, right? He said, Tzarech ke'eder ha'izim, ki kolech arev umarech naveh. Okay, so the big question of this sugya, the most important first question is, this is something I was aware of many years ago, is what is the natural context of these three statements, Rav Chisda, Shmuel, and Rav Sheshet. If we remember, we had two previous statements in the Gemara, one related to Kriyat Shema, and the other one related to the male gaze. So what are the contents of these three? What do you think? Whatever you say will be right. Now, I have an opinion. I have an opinion, but Rishonim have both opinions. You know, I once told my friend Meir Lichtenstein, when we were Bachor Yeshiva, we were told you can never express an opinion about something the Rishonim have already expressed an opinion about. It's not right to be judgmental about the opinions of the Rishonim. So I told him that was once true, but today's Bachor Yeshiva, they're so, they're indifferent. We should tell them to take a stand. So he told me, my grandfather said the same thing. So I will take a stand, but I also appreciate the different opinions of the Rishonim, in spite of my stand. What do you think? What is the natural context of these three statements? So we can talk about this academically or in a shivish way, whatever you prefer. It'll end the same. What do you think?
Kriyat Shema.
Kriyat Shema. I'm with you. Kriyat Shema. So many Rishonim say that it's Kriyat Shema. So then we would say, if we want to do that in terms of the yeshivish way, we would say, once we've accepted that the terminology erva refers to Kriyat Shema in the context of tefach v'isha erva, they all follow suit. That's the yeshivish way. The academic way is to say this. There were, originally in the sugya, four statements of Amoraim. All of them were brought down in Masechet Brachot in the context of Kriyat Shema. But only one presented the Gemara with a problem. The one of Tefach B'isha Erva. Why did he present the problem with the Gemara with a problem? Because we had the statement of Rav Sheshet that implied that the male gaze is a problem regardless of how much of the woman's body is exposed. So the Gemara talked about that particular one and came to the conclusion that Rabbi Yitzchak's statement referred to Kriyat Shema. But once that is taken into account, they all probably have to do with Kriyat Shema. However, not all of the Rishonim thought of it that way. And many Rishonim thought that the last three statements have to do with something similar to the male gaze, and not Kriyat Shema. So it's not Humor or Kula. Don't misunderstand. Because either way you go, you get a different set of chumrot and kula. Rabbah always used to say there is no such thing as chumrah or kula, because every chumrah has a kula, and every kula has a chumrah. Because there's always a price to be paid for everything. That's what he used to say back in Detroit. So here too, the opinions tend to be mutually exclusive, although you could theoretically accept them as being in both contexts. In other words, the Tevach B'Yishayir Vav, we have no choice but to understand in the context only of Kriyat Shema, as the Gemara says, and the rest of them are open to interpretation, and they can be in both contexts. Although nobody actually said that. So, sort of Shulchan Aruch. So I'll show you that in a minute. We'll get to that in a minute. Okay. For now, let me tell you a personal story, and how this is all I knew about 25 years ago, and I was invited to be shaliach to Bnei Akiva in England for about 2 weeks. And then the shaliach, who was from Kibbutz Sa'ad, he said, would you like to come to a concert? And I said, sure, I would love to. So he took me to a concert in London, and I didn't realize that it was going to be something vocal, is that the right word? Very right, vocal? Or so it was some, I don't know exactly what it was. Something like Carol Orff. I don't think it was Carol Orff. Something like that. So it had to do with some kind of Nordic myth. And it was these singers, it was extremely sexual. I was reading the libretto. Okay, so they locked the door, they closed the door, you're stuck there. It's a bit of a halachic problem, but since many Gaonim say it's only a problem in Kriyat Shema, yes, I'll be lismoch. Because what are you going to do? You're stuck there, right? So we get out of the concert, and I say to these people, there was the shaliach from Yavne, and a bunch of other people there, so I said to them, well, you know, really, if I had known this was what was going to be in the concert, I don't know if I would have really come. They said, why wouldn't you come? So I said, well, yesh al midi smoch, there's a shitab, the gonim, that's always a kriyat shema. But this was so, first of all, it was also a lot of avodah zarah myths, but a lot of sexual motifs. They said, really? We didn't understand. So they didn't mean the libretto. So I said, okay, so you didn't have any halachic problem because you didn't read the libretto, you didn't understand, but you didn't get the point of this
creation.
Yeah, you missed the creation because you didn't understand it. So what's the point exactly? Because the music really works well with those sexual motifs. Okay. So that's where I stood about 25 years ago. I only knew, since I was a Bachur Yeshiva mostly, and I only knew Rishonim. So I knew there was an argument in Rishonim. So I said, well, Belet Brera, Yeshal Yismach. And every time I was caught in a certain situation that I thought was improper from the Lachi point of view, I always said, okay, for instance, if a woman sang in a certain circumstances, I wouldn't walk out because I thought, Kvod HaBriot. So, yesh yismoch al shitata gaonim b'gom kvod HaBriot. That was my thought. But since the issue came up recently, I looked into the sugiya again, and I started realizing that the situation was a little more complex than that. Okay. So, we will now quickly look at the different opinions of the Rishonim, and then we'll have time for discussion, I hope. So, okay, let's look at the Rashba. Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's number 5 on the source material. Okay, I'm skipping some of the sources. They're all extremely relevant, but V'ha'amar Rabbi Yitzchak Tefet B'Yishai Arva V'ukim Gam B'Yishto V'Kriyat Shema Pirush Piresh Arai V'Zal De'efshar Datka M'Mukom Tzanua Sheva V'Ala Ka'ati Rav Chizda L'Meimar D'Shot B'Yisha M'Mukom Tzanua V'Arva Hu V'Afilu G'Bei Bala Apo B'Yishai Eino M'Mukom Tzanua V'Yish In other words, there's a difference between men and women. But Paneh Yadev Ragel, the Kol Dibura, She'eno Zemer, Vesara, Utsa Tamata, She'eno Mitkase, En Choshim, Mipnei Shehu Ragil Behem, Velo Tari. So it only has to do with her singing, but her speaking and her hair, which is outside of her brain, which we're used to seeing, we don't have to worry about because men are used to seeing it and it doesn't present a problem. Listen to this, okay, don't fall off your seats. I have to be honest, I'm bringing all the opinions. In other words, you can't listen to a woman speaking, right? So you certainly couldn't vote for Tzipi HaLivni, because you wouldn't be able to listen to what she was saying. Okay? You couldn't listen to a woman at all. Okay. So, but then the Rashba says, and this is very important, Kedaminan Bekidushin, Nishader Mar Shlama Liyalta, Amale Hachya Mar Shmuel Kol Bisha Erva. The story is, Amoraim, they want to send Dishat Shalom to the wife, and he said, Kol Bisha Erva. This is the most stringent opinion. Listen to this, the most stringent opinion. And still, the Rashba stipulates. It's not a problem just to hear the voice of a woman, but in a certain kind of social context, it could present a problem because it would be considered what he calls kiruv hadat. So, the reason I say this is because somebody like Mordechai Eliyahu, I haven't seen the psak. He said that women should not say portions of the Haggadah. Okay? So even according to Rashba, who quotes the Raibe, it says that in some certain circumstances, the Rashba concludes, it's not the Raibe himself, the Rashba says that even in certain circumstances, even listening to women's voice would present a problem, it certainly isn't the circumstance of just reading a Haggadah. It has to do with a certain kind of social scene. Okay? So that's the most stringent opinion that we have. And it has not been included in any halakha after that. Because the accepted opinion is that the only voice which... This is the accepted halakha. I'm not talking about my particular psikha, which I will talk about in a minute. But the accepted halakha is that the only problem is a woman singing. So throughout the world, even in the Haredi world, it's only considered a problem if it's a woman singing, because the Achronim accepted the idea that appears in the Raavad, and appears in many Poskim after the Raavad, that the only problem is Kol Zemer Shel Isha. Okay, even though the original source material just says Kol Bisha Erva, but everybody assumed that a woman's speaking voice doesn't present a problem. Okay, so now we will quickly go to the Rishonim, and then I will show you how I think this should be handled. So the Ritva says, Kol v'isha erva, perush l'kriyat shema. V'yeshom davka kol shel zemer, v'sara mechuse. Aval kol she'eino shel zemer, o sara michutz tzamata, en choshishin lahem. Okay? So, but the Ritva specifically says, what's the context? Kriyat shema. Okay? And even in kriyat shema, it only has to do with a voice or hair that you are not, that men are not used to seeing. Okay? So if I really want to be, if I want to go to a very extreme position, I would say that since we are used to hearing women singing, it doesn't present a problem at all, even for Kriyat Shema. Right? If I would just take the Ritva per se, I would say since in modern Western society we are used to hearing women singing, it doesn't present a problem in any circumstances, including Kriyat Shema. Actually, Rabbi Gilad asked me why it didn't go that way. Okay, so I will explain at the end why the policy I suggested was milder than that. Why do we go to that extreme approach and say, let's accept the Rishonim that say it's only Kriyat Shema, and accept what they say, many of them say, that it has to do with hergel, what we're used to, and just say we're used to hearing women singing, so it's not a problem even in the context of Kriyat Shema. Okay? I prefer not to go that way, and I'll explain that in a minute. Okay. So then this opinion, yes.
Isn't there a difference? I mean, you can't avoid seeing women. that you can avoid. Obviously, none of them do so, hearing a woman sing. Therefore, to say, since we're used to hearing them sing, if you took the trouble, you wouldn't have heard them sing, and you would be just.
That's right.
Whereas it's impossible not to see, in your life, it's impossible not to see women. So seeing and listening to the women, I don't think those are exactly the same.
Mm-hmm. It can be avoided. And we could be not used to it, but is that necessary? If it's dependent on what you're used to, you're already used to it. Why, you know, why would you be interested in getting not used to it? In other words, no. That's a very important question because it has to do with policy. So we'll get to halachic policy. There is something which is called policy. What I mean is that the posek, we talked about this morning. The posek. There's a great deal of flexibility in what the posek does with the material at hand. So, if we have now two approaches, Rav Gilad and the circumcision, the two approaches are, usually, no, it's alright, you know, in my shiur I say we have what Shmuel says in the Sheur, and what the Amorah Shmuel says. So usually what Shmuel said in the Sheur is somebody's opinion, almost always. So, we have these, here are two extreme approaches. Rav Gilad, he didn't actually suggest, I mean, he didn't write the psika. He just said, Rabbi, why don't you just go with Hergil, all the way with Hergil? So many Rishonim and Achronim talk about Hergil. Just go with Hergil altogether. So that's right. One big
approach, right?
What?
Repentance has that approach by Hergil.
It appears in many contexts. It appears mostly about hair, but it appears in many contexts, what you're used to. Certainly it appears in the context of Tefach, which creates a great problem when it. Do I have time for an anecdote?
Yeah.
I started teaching it. We had the first women's yeshiva for Israeli girls, and I started. They asked me to teach the topic of tzniut, so I started teaching the topic of tzniut, tzniut belevush. So, as I'm teaching this, I see that modern day psika really doesn't have any basis at all. Well, I was quite baffled by this. Because I was just a Bachur Yeshiva, I never dealt with this kind of stuff. So back in over 20 years ago, who can you discuss this issue with? When most of the poskim in Israel were against teaching girls Gemara. And here I was teaching girls Gemara. So the only person I knew of in the world that didn't think it was a problem to teach, I didn't actually know what his opinion was, but I assume since he was a Talmid of Rav Soloveitchik, and Rav Soloveitchik was for teaching girls Gemara, he was probably for teaching girls Gemara. So I asked a friend of mine, who was a Talmid of Aaron Lichtenstein, to arrange an interview with him. So I got up at 4:30 in the morning, went down to the Gush, and had a long interview with Lichtenstein about these issues. So when I told him about this problem, I told him the way I handle it is to show the girls that the source material doesn't really point in this direction. However, there is reason for the poskim to set up standards of dress in our present day situation, in spite of the fact that it has very flimsy basis in the source material. That's what I said to him. So he said, there's no other way of handling it. You should never hide the truth. I was a young guy, so it was a very important statement for me. Never hide the truth, and there's no other way of handling it. So the idea of what we're used to is a very prominent factor in the questions of tzniut, okay? It's just downplayed in present-day psika. Okay, so well, that's not our discussion tonight. Okay, so, yeah. So, we have, the interesting thing is that both opinions appear in the Rishonim, both in the Sephardic Rishonim and the Ashkenazic Rishonim. So many Ashkenazic Rishonim say, it's only for Kriyat Shema. Many Ashkenazim poskim say it's not Kriyat Shema. It has to do with what we would call tzniut. They're not familiar with that terminology. They think tzniut is like a major issue. They don't call it tzniut. They relate it to Isur Histaklut. It's one of the things related to Isur Histaklut. Isur Histaklut means the Isur of looking at women in an improper fashion. Usually what the Rishonim say is the shame ta'aba. That's usually the word. Okay? So, that argument is all over the Jewish world. In other words, both in Sfarad and Ashkenaz, both opinions appear. What complicates matters is and including the idea that Kol Mishai in any case has to do with Kol Zemer. We're the most adamant about that is much later on is the Marshal, but that idea appears already in the early Rishonim. What complicates the matters especially is the opinion of the Rambam. So let's see what the Rambam did with this. Okay? Yeah. It complicates matters. The Rambam complicates matters for the following reason. Let's look at this. The Rambam says, look at Shmona Bet, 8 Bet, the end. I always bring the source material a little bit wider than what's necessary so that people see the context. The context has to do with the way the males behave themselves in the presence of females. That's the context. So that then he says, "V'amistakel afilu be'etzek tarash l'isha, v'nitkaben le'enot, k'mishna mistakel b'mekom ha'toreh, v'afilu lishmo kol ha'erva o lirot sa'ara asur." So which context did the Rambam put it in? The male gaze. That's where the context of the Rambam is. Not only that, but the Rambam, when he talks about Kriyat Shema, doesn't mention this. And here he says, at the end of 9, the kol gufa isha erva, the pikech lo istekel the gufa isha kushu kore, vapilu lishto, the im haya megulet tefach megufa, lo yikra kenegda. So how did the Rambam read the Gemara? Not like David and myself, but the other way. In other words, the first statement, no. He doesn't have it in the context of Kriyat Shema at all. Okay? The context is only the male gaze and not the context of Kriyat Shema. Okay? Is that clear? But I want you to point...
He says, if you were correct, he says, he's talking in the Kriyat Shema. He's talking about Kriyat Shema.
No, but only Gufa Isha.
Gufa Isha, right.
Right? And no Sarah and no Kol. So Tefach is a problem. Yes, there's Tefach, Kol, and Sarah. We have Tefach, Kol, and Shok. Shok presents a problem. This is a Lamdisha statement. I hope everybody can follow this. And I wasn't planning to talk about this. I see somebody's going to catch it. So, because people are very with it, so you're going to catch this. The Rambam doesn't talk about shok. Shok presents a problem to him. The thigh, or whatever shok means, there's a big argument about the Achonim. Why does it present a problem for him? Because shok seems to be related to tefach. Is everybody following? Because it just has to be do with the woman's body. So, where do you put this? He thinks the whole end part of the sugya has to do with the male gaze, right? And not Kriyat Shema. But the first part of the sugiya, the tefach, has to do with Kriyat Shema. So shok should be with the first part, and not with the second part. But in the sugiya, appears with the second part. So the Rambam just doesn't mention it at all. Okay? That's how he solved the problem. But that to me is a problem. Solving the problem that way is a problem. He just doesn't, he circumvents the problem by not mentioning shok either place. Okay, so we know, but that shows exactly the fact that the Rambam has this problem in the reading of the Gemara and circumvents us, shows us clearly the way he was reading the Gemara. So he read Tefach as Kriyat Shema and the rest of the Gemara doing what having to do with the male gaze. If not for the Rambam and the fact that Shulchan Aruch accepted the Rambam, I would have said, when I was asked the question, let's depend on the opinion of the Gaonim. This has to do with policy. I didn't feel it was right to go against the Shulchan Aruch. And the whole tradition that stems from the Shulchan Aruch. Okay? So let me tell you where I stood as I was writing the Tshuva. This is the question that, I'll tell you the whole circumstances of the question, even though it got way out of proportion. The original Tshuva was written in my mind. It was written in my mind when my wife came back from, she's a teacher at the school in Staliel. For years and years, the girls at Staliel sang, and they had musicals. But the question came up in the context, not of the musicals, but in the context of Tekes Yom HaZikaron, the Tekes Yom HaShoah. Okay? Wow. So in that context, a young lady would sing something related to Yom HaShoah, Yom HaZikaron, for years and years since the beginning of Kibbutz Alati. And then some people started saying that this was improper. And the girls were very offended by that. Okay? So then the Rav of the school, there's a position in Israel now which is the Rav of the school, he asked me what I thought about it. So I sort of was wishy-washy at the beginning because I figured it was his responsibility, but I told him, you know, that that I think that the Shofar should not be made about it. And that, more or less. And he said, why do you say that? I said, well, first of all, this is Shitat HaGaonim, and second of all, even if we accept the opinion of Shulchan Aruch, and that's what I want to discuss now, Tvida, even if we accept the opinion of Shulchan Aruch, it's not clear that this is a problem. Okay, and the reason I said that was because I didn't think it was appropriate to just say let's go according to the Gaonim when Shulchan Aruch had already accepted the opinion of the Rambam that this has to do with the male gaze. So I didn't think it was appropriate just to say Shulchan Aruch. I also did not think it was appropriate to say, and I'll explain that in a minute, just let's forget about it because we're used to women singing. And this has to do with halachic policy. I could have been more lenient than I was. In fact, some people view my opinion as being not lenient at all. I'll tell you what, I got some write-ups in newspapers. So I'll tell you what people said about my tzach. So my thought was this, that since the context of... Wait a minute, I want to tell you about Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch does something very strange. He says this. He paskins the Rambam's opinion that this has to do with the male gaze, and then he says in Kriyat Shema, Ra'ui, in Kriyat Shema as well. Ra'ui. You can see the words of Shulchan Aruch on this issue. He says, Yeshli Zeher, 13. And in the Beit Yosef, he explains it at great length. Yeshli Zeher Mishmiat Kol Zemer Ishto Isha B'Kriyat Shema. Yeshli Zeher. And the reason he says that is we knew that from the Rambam's point of view, Kriyat Shema does not present a problem at all. Once you decide it's like, they're mutually exclusive. Once you decide it's Kriyat Shema, there's no problem with the male gaze. Once you decide it's a problem with the male gaze, it's not a problem with Kriyat Shema. But the Beit Yosef thought that it would be appropriate in Kriyat Shema as well. Okay? Yes. Okay, that's what I want to talk about. Okay, but before, okay, that's exactly what I want to talk about. So, why isn't that true? Why, if it's a problem of the male gaze, why did it automatically become a problem of Kriyat Shema? And why didn't the Rambam say, therefore it's a problem of Kriyat Shema, and why is the Shulchan Aruch so delicate and say, Yesh Li Zaher? There's a very simple reason for that. The reason for that is that if it has to do with the male gaze, it depends on the way the male is listening to the female's voice. Just like all of Isur Histaklut. All of Isur Histaklut has to do, as we would say in Hebrew, Be'enei HaMistakel. Okay? So it depends on the way men are listening to women's voices. Okay, this is not something I made up. When Rav Avram David Horovitz, who was a wonderful person, there are two wonderful Haredi poskim who eventually became associated with the Edah Haredit. But before that, they were Rabbanim of huge kilot. One was the Rav of Manchester. His name was Rav Yitzchak Weiss. And the other was Avram David Horowitz. We actually placed him in the Edah Haredit. I actually talked to him once at Great Lane under very strange circumstances. Very nice people. And when they were Rabbanim of their kilot in Manchester and Strasbourg, they were accepted. Avram David Horowitz was the Rav of Strasbourg before he came to Edah Haredit. They both come from Hasidic background. Okay, so Rav Hill Weinberg was when he was in France and he had to deal with the problem of mixed youth movements and singing, he wrote letters to various poskim. So he wrote a letter to Rav Horowitz in Strasbourg. right? He's in France. He writes Rav Horowitz. And then we have in the CDH, we have Rav Horowitz's letter to him. And Rav Horowitz says to him, you think that people can hear girls singing and not be sexually enticed. But that's because you're an old man. But if you were a young fellow in, I think it's Hatzofima Dati'in in France at that time. I think it's some kind of scouting youth movement. If you were a young person, you would view it differently. That's what he says to it. So in my tshuva, I quote that to say that nobody thought of it, excuse my language, in a brisker fashion, din erva. You know what I'm talking about? The brisker thought, everything becomes this theoretical halacha. But when Avram David Horowitz, this important posek, thought about it, he thought about it as a problem in real mitzvot. It's not din erva, something which is automatic. It's only automatic because that's the way he thought that young people relate to women's thinking, singing. It has to do with reality, the way human beings in reality react. This has to do with my pet peeve, that when halakha dealt with real life situations, as a result of the influence of Rav Soloveitchik and his Talmidim, the real life situations are no longer real life situations. Everything becomes a theoretical halakha. So you never deal with the real life situation at all. So what I said was that this is the basic nature of kol bi'isha erva. It has to do with the reality of the situation. If the woman's voice is enticing or if it isn't. So even if we don't go according to the opinion of the Gaonim, we go according to the Shulchan Aruch, we should take this into consideration. Okay? So this is the way I wrote the tshuva. I said, since the girls are offended by this, we should be willing to go out on a limb and even accept Daf Yachid. Okay? And then I said, we could go according to the opinion of the Gaonim and say there's no problem whatsoever. But to do that, we would have to go against Shulchan Aruch. But even if we accept the approach of Shulchan Aruch, the natural way of explaining Shulchan Aruch is in the context in which the things were said. And nothing about historical context, but the textual context. And it's historical context as well, but it's the textual context which is Isur Histaklut. So any woman singing which is not in the context of being sexually enticing should not present a problem at all, even according to Shulchan Aruch. Okay? And then I cited some secondary sources. So I cited Listei Chemed, who says that exactly that it's only what he calls Shirei Agavim. It's only the problem of Shirei Agavim. And I also mentioned that Rav Aaron Soloveitchik told us that if we were singing in Bnei Akiva along with the girls, it would not be considered kol bi'isha erva. What he meant was, if you're singing, you're not listening. Okay, so we took that very literally. In all my years in Bnei Akiva, whenever the girls started singing, if I hated the song immensely, this one that I really hated, which was shifty, 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 woo. I once said at TVI, I said, can you imagine somebody sitting in Bevet Hashem and saying, woo? That ended it. The kids didn't sing that anymore. But I would always sing with them because Rav Aaron Soloveitchik said you have to sing. But even though Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, maybe he meant that, but I think his point was that the problem is in listening. Maybe he meant technically listening. But I don't think the problem is technically listening. I think it has to do with the way you're listening. Just like the Rishonim say about, and the Achronim, about Isur Histaklut. Other than the Bach, all the Rishonim, the Achronim say it has to do with the quality, the way you look at woman. There's no problem to look at woman. The problem is looking at woman in a certain way. Okay? So that's the accepted opinion among Rishonim and Achronim in the Haredi world. Right? So you don't have to close your eyes. And you can talk. And I lived in Gula for a couple of years, and we went to the store, and there was a woman selling, and everything was natural. There was no problem, right? It's not like they're not necessarily crazy. So my talk was very simple. I said, if the context presents a problem, then we should accept the opinion of Shulchan Aruch that it is only not, it's not only for Kriyat Shema. But if everything is all right and it's not a sexual context, then there's no reason to assume it's a problem at all. Okay? So I say I gave five criteria. This is where I got some flack for my criteria. The first one I called context and atmosphere. The second one was musical style. And I just said musical style. The reason I didn't get into musical style is because it has to do with cultural association. In other words, once jazz was considered lewd, I don't think it's considered lewd today. So it depends on the... That's why I just said musical style, because I didn't want to get into the what makes the style of improper. Some people used to say syncopated rhythms used to be considered sexual. I don't know if they are today. But, okay, so that's one thing. And then I said the lyrics, and then I said the way the woman is dressed, and body language. Those were my criteria that I set up. And then I said if those all five criteria are met, like in a tekes Yom Ha'atzmaut, Yom HaZikaron, but it could be other contexts as well, then I think that there should not really be a problem. The reason I said that was because I think the approach of Shulchan Aruch, that Kol Bisha Erva can be a problem in the context of the male gaze, even though it might not be the pshat of the sugiyah, is an irrelevant, makes Kol Bisha relevant to modern Western society. That's why my policy was, first of all, I didn't want to go against Shulchan Aruch. I would, and even though we can accept a minority opinion, many achorim say you cannot accept a minority opinion against halacha psuka. It's very hard to define what halacha psuka is exactly. So I said I was wary going against Shulchan Aruch, but I thought that other than just being wary against going against Shulchan Aruch, I thought that there is a certain kind of singing which should present us with a problem. Is everybody following? And then I wrote one more note, which actually my wife pushed me into. But she pushed me into it. She said, this is what she said. She said, don't you think that once you've written this criteria, that it should apply to men as well? So I said, you're right, Ariella, but there only is one source that implies that, and it isn't an accepted source according to halacha. So I added a note in my tshuva, which was, of course, these criteria should apply to males as well, as implied by Sefer Chassidim, and even though this isn't absolutely necessary according to halacha, I think we should follow this rule. Okay, so because there wasn't source material to base that. So the flack I got, and another thing I said was that the old way of Bnei Akiva in Israel, which was Trei Kali Lo Mishtame, that's what they always used to say. Is after two, I said that's not relevant at all because it obviously isn't relevant to the context, and that was already said by Avram David Horowitz. He said it's not.
Makes no difference in your mind if it's an all girls choir.
All girls, all boys, all girls and boys, doesn't make any difference whatsoever. And right. And if you, so here's the principle that has to do with Maxika, which is much more general principle in Maxika, not only mine, which is to put things back into their natural context. And not utilize formalities, lekulo lekumra, unless it's absolutely necessary. In other words, when there's a natural understanding, why make it into a formality? You make it into a formal isur, right? Kol bisha, even though the context is obviously something which is sexually enticing. You say all singing is forbidden, and then you use a gemara that has to do with something else altogether. Say kali, which has to do with.
So you're really going against the whole truth of the Sfirei Yesh, who allowed it in the first place. He was just, you know. When the Sfirei Yesh allowed co-ed groups and singing,
he
allowed it on the Trei Kali.
Not only. Well, that part of the Tshuva I think is very weak. Trei Kali, because the Trei Kali is like... actually, that also is my wife's doing. About 25 years ago or more, there was this Bnei Akiva group on television. Okay? And the girls were singing, and my wife said, look at these girls. There are two of them singing, but they are doing all their body language is exactly like the body language of all the rock singers of our time. Okay? These are things I don't notice usually. But my wife pointed out to me, and then I said, wow, this is really ridiculous. This Trei Kali solves all the problems. So I was machmir and mekel. I said, no, Trey Kali, that's out. That's ridiculous. Not relevant at all. It's all dependent upon the nature of the singing. And I gave five criteria. So then somebody wrote in the newspaper, she wrote, a big man allows a woman to sing as long as she's wearing a dubon. You know a dubon? Like it's heavy. I think that's like exactly what I had in mind. So what I meant, you know, what I meant to sing, I wasn't even thinking of how, for why I said dress, I wasn't thinking of halachic criteria of any sort. I was just thinking of natural criteria. You understand what's natural in our society, what we're used to, not something. But I did it. I think that there certainly is a certain kind of singing which would be forbidden. So when my students, I asked my students many years, because I want to get a hand on reality. So there's students who come to the yeshiva, and they had no inkling of kol b'isha. They come from, we call, I don't know if anybody, you have to be Israeli to understand this, they come from Hayadut HaNehora Shel Katamon V'Talpiyot. Okay, that's where my student body comes. So they never heard of kol b'isha. So they go to concerts, right? So then they come to yeshiva, and they all of a sudden they find out that there's this thing called kol b'isha erva. So they asked me, can I go to the concert? So I said, well, what happens at the concert? Do you ever feel enticed? I said, well, where am I? I said, not unless the singer wants us to. That was always the answer. Almost always. So if it's Yudi Dravitz or somebody like that, it never presents a problem to them. So that gave me a hand on reality, because I never go to these concerts. So I had to figure out what was going on. So they said, it's not normally something that comes to mind, something sexual. It doesn't come to mind at all. So why think it's a problem? So that's where I got a hand on reality, by just asking my students but I did not want to say that all singing in the Western world is appropriate according to halakha, because I think some of it is not. Some of it is not appropriate from a halakha point of view, and some of it is not appropriate from the feminist point of view, and usually they're more or less the same. Okay, so that's it. So now it's time for discussion. I think it's time for discussion. And the Tshuva is written and it's been translated into English. And so some people said you're very machmir because you have all these criteria. Some people said you're so mekel. And some people say there's a problem with your criteria because you trust people to make the judgment. Oh, yes. That's exactly what I wanted to do. I trust people. I think there's a big problem in halakha today is that we don't trust people. I think people can be trusted. On these issues especially, even though they can be trusted, they can be trusted to make mistakes as well. But they would make mistakes even if we were very formal about halakha. Because people make mistakes. Certainly on these kinds of issues, people make mistakes. And also, I don't think the mistake has to do anything. In other words, the young woman who wants to sing can sing, and the young fellow wants to misunderstand their singing, that's his problem, not her problem. Because it's Yisuri Staklut. Yisuri Staklut is always the male's problem, not the female's problem. Yes?
So, if I understand correctly, the Staklut issue is part of the Ramban's concern of the way he's passing as well. There's a subjectivity to it. I'm trying to establish the parameters for the subjectivity. Because it's so subjective, it scores differently in different people's minds. He sets certain criteria, a lot of it seems to be based upon Hegel. A lot of it seems to be contextual. Like you said, your self-syncopation was.
So I trust you to make the judgment. But usually people, I think for the most people, most people can make the judgment. I don't know what happened at the choir here. I don't know what kind of choir, but I assume if it was something for Yom HaZikaron Rabin, it probably wasn't lewd.
No.
I mean, it doesn't seem appropriate for it to be lewd, so what's the story? So from my point of view, that's a sort of obvious context. So what's the problem? So there could be some issues, let's say there could be a certain something in between, which somebody would think about. It might decide, I'll be machmir, I'll be mekel on a personal basis. But usually, for the most part, it will be quite clear. It is dependent upon context. But the contexts usually are quite clear.
How about, for example, mixed minyanis? Where there's, nowadays they're becoming quite fashionable. And women do part of the tefillah, so on.
Yeah. So you notice, I didn't deal with that question in the tshuva, but if you notice, many of the Rishonim that say that it is Kriyat Shema, right? According to Shulchan Aruch, Kriyat Shema is only Ra'ui, right? But if any, if we go back to, so it's not so much of a serious problem because, right, it's only growing. But obviously it would not be a general problem if the singing wasn't appropriate. But many of the Rishonim that said that it is a problem for Kriyat Shema, they still make it dependent upon the, this kind of singing. So if it's singing, which is not, right, some of them make it dependent on the kind of singing. How much is considered singing? Is chanting of Tefillah considered singing? Right. What about is Kriyat HaTorah considered singing? But is Chazanut might be considered singing? Right. But even if you do consider it singing, there it's more complicated because they have the opinion that it is for Kriyat Shema. But still, I think if it was not, many Rishonim say that even in that context, it depends on what kind of singing it was. Yes. So that's a little bit more complicated. Yes.
I want to raise an area that you haven't not really touched on, and that is the social area. Because what's happening, and I think this happened with the concert, was this push in our society more and more, less so in Israel, to separate boys and girls to club.
No, it's very much in Israel.
Yeah, no,
very
much. Okay. So let me just tell you a story. I went to a few years ago, an anniversary party for very dear friends from the kids are from our, the four kids, two boys, two girls, prepared phenomenal presentations. And the boys did theirs, and then the girls who actually, the work was brilliant. Came their time to get up, and they said, "We will read for our wives." Now they were reading something. I mean, the women would have been reading to their dear parents who were long married. And they said, "Now there's a spinoff from this. It's not just a halachic decision. It somehow it seems to be meta. It's more because the screens are creating a world where the women don't talk."
Yeah, that's why Shmaya Ross says this halacha is hushing up woman.
Yeah.
But I don't understand her. I had a debate with her on several occasions. And she is adamant about what she considers halakha, Tamar Ross. Who was a dear friend of mine. But Tamar Ross said, said, I have to tell you something about Tamar Ross. A few times I went up to Tamar Ross and I said, "Tamar, how could you possibly write such and such? After all," and she said, "You're right, the article is already written." Every time I want to make a statement, she's already thought it. I once wanted to write an article about postmodernism of Cook with my students. She already wrote it. She wrote it for different paragraphs. I would have chosen other paragraphs of Ralph Cook, but she already wrote the article. Every time I want to write something, she's already thought of it and written it better than I ever could. But in spite of that, after I've given her the proper respect, she's sure that what happens in the Haredi world is the halakha. And then she says, "This halakha is horribly chauvinist and is hushing up women." And I say to Tamar, "What are you talking about? Is this halakha? Halakha is much more flexible. Why did you, just the way they go is not necessarily halakha. In Sephardic communities, until very recently, women sang. Many Sephardic communities, women just sang in all kinds of family functions and women sang. Why do you think that their way of going is what?
In Germany, it's all the women sang.
Yeah, so why do you think that particular take is halakha? So that's a very serious issue. I think there's a problem in the way they are going because they are trying to solve an insolvable problem. In other words, if you think you can damper sexuality altogether, you're making a grave error. It won't work. So then it sort of backfires on them. And that many people have noticed the problem is this. If you talk all about time about tzniut, actually the first person who noticed this is Reb Chaim Hirschenson of Hoboken, New Jersey. Yeah. Friend of Rav Kook. He noticed that if you overdo this, it backfires. So the old joke that we used to say back in the yeshiva years ago, I think it was in Skokie, he used to say, a guy hears a woman singing, and he says, "Oh, this isn't enticing at all. But after all, it says in halacha, kol b'shayerva, I'll listen again." Right? So that's where it goes, like it gets backwards. So I think we should be more natural about it and not. That has to do with the question that was asked previously about policy. Should we be separating all the time? And that, I think, is the wrong policy because it backfires. But this doesn't have to do with halakha. Because it does say, in Shulchan Aruch, it says, צריך האדם להתרחק מנשים מאוד מאוד. Okay, is that halacha? Is everything that's put in Shulchan Aruch halacha? Or is that some kind of moralistic statement that has certain context? Rav Aaron Soloveitchik told us specifically. When I was young, whatever Rav Aaron said, I did. So I asked Rav Aaron whether I was allowed to participate in B'nai Akiva activities. Okay, so I wow, this takes a long time. So I asked Rav Aaron whether he was allowed to participate in B'nai Akiva activities. He was very much for B'nai Akiva. So he said, I have to quote the way he would say it, I mean there is no Isor. He said, I mean Ichmei, but I haven't said it that time. I mean there is no Isur. So from his point of view, that Tzarich Litechet Min Hashim Mo'od Mo'od did not imply that you could not have mixed activities. Because I don't think he viewed it as being halakha, per se. He said there is no Isur. Okay, so that's a different problem altogether, though. Because that there is room. Some strange things are happening. You talk about here in Israel, they have Sifim of Bnei Akiva, where they have mixed activities, but when they learn, they separate the kids and put up a mechitza. Like that, to me, is the most ridiculous thing in the world. Because I don't know what the other activities are, but let me tell you another story. He says how much the world has changed. We asked Rav Druchman. I can't believe the things we say. So anyway, we asked Rav Druchman whether we could learn together. So he said, is there a better activity to do together? This is years ago, right? So why in the learning do they separate? And what does that say? And doesn't that increase the problem with istaklut if you have a mixed sniff and at one time? So I told him it's better either to have it mixed all together or have it separated all together, but to separate for that kind of activity says something, I don't know what it says, but it certainly doesn't say anything about Siyut or Limut Torah. It says something horrible. I don't know what. Yes, there's a question here, yes.
Yeah, my question is, can you apply the same line of reasoning you presented to mixed women?
Yeah, fair. Okay. Now, the answer to that is, sort of. So I will explain. There... Since Isuri Staklud has to do with the subjectivity of the male, it is conceivable that a male could see a woman in a bikini and not be affected. However, I think that is unlikely. So therefore, I would say that I would never say to a student, you go ahead and do mixed swimming, even though theoretically there could be somebody who could do mixed swimming, and there's an old rumor about the Soloveitchik brothers, both of them. Rav Asher ben Rav Aaron that used to go to mixed swimming. Right? There is even a story about Rav Asher ben Rav Aaron Luchtenstein, where he invited him to go swimming. There's different versions of that story. And Rav Aaron didn't want to go, he was a young guy. He didn't want to go swimming, and Rav Asher ben said, Aaron, don't be a chnyok. But I don't know. But I think for most people it does present a problem. It also presents a problem because usually, mixed swimming includes a certain kind of atmosphere. Judging from what happens on the religious kibbutz movement, and when they have mixed swimming, it usually has a certain kind of an atmosphere which is inappropriate.
It also applies to the type of criterion. Like, some women like, go to exercise, and everybody there is exercising, and nobody's looking at anybody.
Right, so there could be. And also, what would you say, where's the problem? That's another mistake. Misunderstanding. The problem is for men and not for women. So if you're going, I'll give you a very extreme case, okay? So let's say Safta goes to a beach with a lot of young girls wearing bikinis, right? And she goes swimming on that beach. So does she present a problem to somebody? In other words, what's the context? Yeah, you hope she does. Yeah, you're similar. So what's the context here? I said Safta because of in Yoredea they say, how do you know a woman is elderly when people in the street call her Safta? Since I'm a Saba, my wife's a Safta. It's okay. So it depends on the context. It does depend on the context. Certainly the problem is for men more than women, because if the woman goes swimming and there are men, it really is their problem, not her problem, according to basic halakha. There's a big problem. This is a separate issue altogether, but the big problem is that in Shulchan Aruch, most, this has to do with what I discussed with Rav Lichtenstein way back when. The whole issue of siyud is male-oriented. The only, in Siman Chavad and Shulchan Aruch, where it talks about Isur Yislakud, it talks about all kinds of male activities that are improper. The only thing it mentions about a woman is covering their hair. Okay? But the reason for that was that fashion was different then. In other words, it wasn't commercialized and sexual motifs were not used to sell clothes as they are in Western society. That's why we can sort of understand why the Poskim clamped down and started talking about criteria. Because at one time, it's well known that there's a cycle in fashion and different parts of a woman's body are exposed at different times to create excitement and to sell clothes. And that's a modern Western phenomenon. At one time, just things sort of flowed for a long time before they changed. So people got used to what the women were wearing. So the whole situation, there is a reason why people are very machmir today. So, but basically, that's a big problem because all of a sudden it becomes the problem of women and not of men. But it's basically a problem of men. I once saw the kids brought me a pamphlet from the Haredi world that told women how to dress and how to get out of the buses and all kinds of things, right? So they have these pictures of do's and don'ts. How won't you get out of it? So the guy said, what do you think of this, Rav Bigman? I said, it looks to me like a book that shows the Haredi boys what to look at. Yeah. Right? That's the story. See, everything is reversed. And everybody's almost forgotten completely about the male responsibility in this situation. So that's a big problem. I don't think we should go overboard about the male responsibility either. One more anecdote, okay? Because there's no damper cream made in it completely. So Rav Aaron Lichtenstein also, this one discussion we had, we talked about a lot of things. So he told me this story that was unbelievable. He told me that he was sitting in with Rav Elimelech Bar Shul, the Rav of Rehovot. I didn't even know they had a connection. And he said, this was the time of the miniskirts. So a young Hasidic Bachur Shiva came into Rav Elimelech Bar Shul and he said, you know, I'm walking down the street, I can't keep my eyes off the girl's legs. So then Rav Elimelech Bar Shul said, Baruch Hashem ata Bachur Normali. That was, Rav literally told me this story, right? On the one hand, it is responsibility of the males, and that's gotten all skewed completely. Everybody's forgotten it, and they keep on telling the women to cover themselves up more and more. What about the male's responsibility? On the other hand, even the male responsibility has to be taken with a little bit of moderation, because it's not something that can be escaped completely. Right? There's responsibility here, but we have to understand that, especially at a certain age, boys, as they say, boys will be boys, and we have to be careful about giving them guilt feelings, and we can go overboard with the guilt trip as well. Yes?
Just back to your last question for one moment. If you went by the Rishonim of Kriyat Shema, then swimming is not an issue.
No. The reason for that is that the first statement of Rav Sheshet, Kol HaMisugel Be'etzvah Tanah Shel Isha, is halacha psuka. There's an isuri staklut. Mitzvah would not present a problem if we assume that it doesn't present a problem of istaklut for the majority of males. But I think it does. Or, I don't know, but I think it does. It's been a long time. The last time I went mitzvah was when I was about in 7th or 8th grade. When in the modern Orthodox community in Detroit, everybody went to the beach together. Since I went to yeshiva, I never went mitzvah again. So I don't remember so much. But I think that's the case. Right. Yeah.
So it's a question of this taklut. Why can an unmarried woman why can you look at an unmarried woman who doesn't have a haircut?
Yeah.
That is such a
great question, because the Rishonim deal with that question, and after they deal with the question, I think every questioning mind still has a question. Because what they say is, in their time, they ask why the Pnuyot have their hair uncovered, and they say, we're used to it. Okay. So then that's why some people want to anchor what they call Minhag Neshot America. That they have their hair uncovered because of hair gel. Okay? It's not so simple though. It's not so simple because the standard opinion is that the reason women cover their hair when they're married is because of different Gemara altogether. And that Gemara, the way it relates to Erva, is not clear at all. In other words, okay, wow, do we have time for this? It takes about 2 minutes. The Aruch HaShulchan understands it in the wake of the Rishonim in the following fashion. Se'ar Bisha Erva, because we have this norm that married women have their hair covered. The norm creates the Erva, because then we're not used to it. Okay, but they're not married, so according to that, there really is no problem of Se'ar Bisha Erva, except in a context that you're not used to it. So I can tell you how this affects real life in a minute, but let me tell you, the Mishnah Berurah does it the other way, and the Mishnah Berurah creates the Machmir approach, because the Mishnah Berurah says the reason a woman has to have her hair covered is because Se'ar Bisha Erva. He ignores the Rishonim that talk about Hergel. Many Rishonim talk about what we're used to. And then we have the situation which we judge the criteria for Kisui Rosh according to Erva, which leads to the Kula of Rav Moshe Feinstein that Rav Avadya Yosef accepted, which is that a woman can have breadth of two fingers of her hair uncovered. How do they get to that? Because Rav Moshe Feinstein understood that the woman's face is not to be considered erva, and according to his measurements based on the Gemara, some of the hair is considered part of the face, and is therefore not erva, and can therefore be uncovered. Okay? So, that's one way of going. But the simple way of going is to understand in another way, that we have this custom, which is considered doraita. It's very strange. All these words are very strange, but they appear in the Rishonim. We have this custom, which is considered very ancient and considered Doraita. I think Bobby says it's Doraita. According to other sources, it's not Doraita. Why can't I just do things simple? I always have to say, do you want to get into that one? That's another 2 minutes. It says in the Baraita, when the Kohen takes but in the Bible it says, Azhara liv not Yisrael shalotelech na purot rosh. Because it says Azhara, that implies it's the writer. And the writer in the Sifrei, it doesn't say Azhara, neither does it say Azhara in Yerushalmi, but in the Bavli's version of the writer it says Azhara. And then the Bavli puts that juxtaposed to the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that Yudi. The Rishonim explained that Yudi. Mashe no'agot v'not Yisrael. So since v'not Yisrael are no'agot kisui rosh, if they go out without a kisui rosh, it's considered pritzut, but it's dependent on what they're no'agot. But since the Braita says Azhara, it must be Doraita. So then the Bavli makes a compromise. It talks about Kalata. Kalata is Kalatos, it's a headdress. Okay, it's from Greek. In the Yerushalmi, they call it kapaltam, capital. Right, so it's a headdress. So they say there's a minimum headdress, which is considered Doraita, and a maximum headdress, which we consider minhag, that's UD. That's why Kisui Rosh becomes more of a problem, because the Bavli decided that it's Doraita. Okay? That is not necessarily because they are being Shai Erva. That's some kind of standard of dress that existed from biblical times. Right? Even in documents from Middle Assyria, it says that the Eshet Ish Haguna has her hair covered, versus the Putzot.
But the Putzot
This is an ancient custom. Yes. Which is the Torah talks about. The Torah utilizes that custom. Yes.
I mean, in Lithuania, where the men at the Rosh Hashanah was not, the wives of Rosh Hashanah did not cover their hair, and then,
right.
You know, of course, Elijah,
right.
Except and others, obviously they understood it is connected to Erevah, and Erevah is a subjective idea. And if you live in a society where the woman walks around with her hair uncovered, so the Seyar loses the status,
right.
Of Erevah.
Right. Apparently, although it's never been. It's never been said clearly.
But
it is true that you look at a picture of Moshe Feinstein's mother. There's a picture of her. It doesn't look like she has her hair covered.
No. Bill Moshe's wife didn't cover her
What?
Bill Moshe's wife, Bill Feinstein, moved to America. Bill Moshe's wife also didn't have her hair covered. The Rav's wife never covered her hair, right?
Right.
But none of these women covered their hair in America. In Europe. When they came to America, they all covered their hair, except the Rav. The Rav's wife never covered her hair.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, it's a different issue altogether, so I think it's enough for now.
Right. I just want to say thank you very much.
Yeah,
it's been a pleasure.
Time.
No. It doesn't look like anybody's complained, but a couple people have to make a quick exit.
Okay,
it was our honor and our pleasure. Thank you.
We hope you found this recording a most enjoyable learning experience. We welcome your feedback. Please contact us at info@torahinmotion.org or at www.torahinmotion.org. Have a great day. Thank you.